Well, welcome once again to Historical Hystericals, and hang on, Robin, we've already done Robin Williams. Robin Williams, part two, here we go. Hi everybody, and welcome once again, Robin Williams, once again, Historical Hystericals, Robin Williams, part two. Oh boy.
I'm Commander Mike, and he's Chris Brennan.
That's it.
That's us. This is a massive story.
Oh, it's huge. But before we launch into the rest of Robin Williams, we'll just give you some quick information of how you can reach Historical Hystericals.
You can check out our website, commandermike356.podomatic.com. You can email us at commandermike356@yahoo.com.au, or you can look us up on Facebook under Historical Hystericals.
Just get to Facebook, type in Historical Hystericals, and boop, up we come.
So where'd we get to with Robin? Oh, it was around about here.
One interesting thing about the Awakenings is while they were filming the scene where Dr. Sayer and the security guards are attempting to restrain Robin, Robin actually hits Robert De Niro in the face with his elbow and breaks his nose.
Oops.
Oh, my God. Robert De Niro later commented that his nose had been broken before, but in the opposite direction, and this injury actually straightened it out. Talk about giving it all for your craft. Dr. Sachs, the original Dr. Sachs that Robin Williams was portraying, described Robin as having some sort of voluntary Tourette syndrome.
And he's a medical man, so he should know.
Oh, yeah.
This brings us to 1991. Had three roles. Kenneth Branagh's Dead Again. He played a straight once more as a disgraced psychiatrist who, angry, bitter, and working in a supermarket, gives Branagh some deadly advice on how to off his girlfriend. This impressed Branagh so much that 5 years later he would be cast in Hamlet. 1991 saw Robin appear in a cameo role in Shakes the Clown. That is an interesting little movie.
Mm.
After Dead Again with Kenneth Branagh came The Fisher King. Now, perhaps Robin's best film.
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting film. Another one. If you haven't seen it, grab it, have a look at it. Interesting performances all round from that one.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges was wonderful. Incredible film. And once again, Robin got an Oscar nomination.
Did he win, though?
No, nominated.
Mm. After The Fisher King came Spielberg and Hook, with Robin playing the part of the grown-up Peter Pan. That was brilliant.
Yes.
And again, here he is aligned with another fantastic actor. He was with Dustin Hoffman, who was playing Captain Hook, who kidnaps the children. Of course, Peter Pan's got to come along and must return them.
Yep.
Brilliant movie.
Now, it was action-packed, adventurous, and it did break $100 million for the film, but it was deemed to be overly sentimental and considered Steven Spielberg's first flop.
I want to know who considers it a flop. I mean, come on.
It made over $100 million, and they just say, oh, it's overly sentimental. It's not, oh, I don't know.
Mm. I don't understand critics sometimes.
Mm.
But they love us, of course.
Yes. Yes. Now, also under good reference in Hook, Smee says, "Good morning, Neverland." It's a reference to Good Morning, Vietnam.
I can do it better.
Okay.
Yeah, what, that's all right.
You want to do that? No.
No, it's okay. I think I'll blow the levels if I do it again.
When Toodles floats out the window at the end, he says, "Seize the day." Once again, a reference to Robin's previous movies, Dead Poets Society and Seize the Day.
Now, here's an interesting little piece of trivia for you. In Peter Pan, Robin actually had his upper body and his arms shaved for the role in the film. Because if you've ever seen Robin Williams without a shirt, he's a hairy little bugger.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
And he told a funny story.
His shirt, he's wearing a jumper.
He told a funny story about that too, as the girls, they had two girls waxing his upper body, and halfway through they turned to him and said, "Do you mind if we take a break?"
Oh, dear. After Hook, Robin moved on to do Disney's Aladdin, ad-libbing like crazy as the voice of the genie, and his performance carried the movie past the 200 million mark.
Now, we've got to say, the director on this was brilliant. Because they gave him the script, sat him in the studio, and Robin started reading the script and then went off on tangents. Now, the story I've heard is that the sound recordist went to stop the recording and stop him and get him back on the script, and the director just stopped him and said, "Nope, tape's cheap, let him go."
Mm.
and they got so much material. I think it was like 16 hours of material was improvised that they could cut down and actually film.
Wouldn't you love to hear those tapes?
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Now, although a great success, there was trouble with Disney. Now, Robin demanded that they not market the film as a Robin Williams film. And what did they do? They did just that. Now, Disney then claimed that he was just trying to stick them for more money. In fact, all he wanted was an apology, which he received somewhere down the track.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't want to push it. And up to then, no animated film had been promoted on the strength of the voice cast.
Whereas today it happens quite a lot.
Yeah, but Disney started it with Aladdin, and Robin was saying, no, there's so many artists and other performers that should be featured. Don't feature my name. But that's how it went. Now, the wonderful scene, that opening scene with the merchant selling stuff at the beginning of the film, this was done. Robin was brought into the soundstage and was asked to stand behind a table that had several objects on it covered by a bed sheet. Now, the animators asked him to lift the sheet and, without looking at him, take an object from the table and describe it in character. So much of this material at that recording session was not appropriate for a Disney film. They're the tapes I'd like to hear.
That would be something special.
Mm.
Now, while he was filming Aladdin, Robin got a call from Steven Spielberg. Now, at the time, Steven Spielberg was working on Schindler's List. Now, not a very funny film at all. But Spielberg wanted to put Robin on speakerphone so that he could tell jokes to the cast and crew and cheer them up.
Yeah, as you would.
Yeah, I mean, oh, this is a really serious role. This is a really serious part of the movie. Hang on, I'll get Robin Williams on the phone to tell jokes to everybody.
Yeah. Now, there's a wonderful story, too, how Robin Williams came on board to do Aladdin. Now, they wanted to present him something to show what they had in mind. So they got a very small clip of his Reality What a Concept album. Now, the line was, schizophrenia is a very serious problem. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. Shut up, both of you. And that's pretty much the speed that Robin delivered it on stage on the album. So they got that sound grab, and they animated the genie to say, schizophrenia is a very serious problem. A head grew out of the genie's shoulder and says, no, it isn't. Said, yes, it is. And another head grew out of the other shoulder and says, shut up, both of you. And they presented that to Robin, said, this is kind of what, and Robin took one look and said, oh, sign me up. Now, perhaps unwisely, Robin stayed with the kids' market in Barry Levinston's Toys. Now, here he played Leslie Zevo, whose dying toy maker father bequeaths his factory to his brother, a military man, who starts using it to manufacture weapons. Now, could Robin foil the wicked plans and return the factory to its former glories? No one really seemed to care.
That's probably one of Robin's films that I haven't seen more than once. I sort of watched it and go, and that was about it. Just one that didn't grab me for some reason.
The film laid there like a turkey, but Robin came out unscathed. He still had incredible popularity around the world. Now, then he stepped into his biggest role to date, Mrs. Doubtfire. Robin played a divorcee who disguises himself as an elderly housemaid in order to see his kids. He delivered an incredibly strong performance. The film went through the roof, and Robin recorded his second $200 million hit in 2 years. Both those won him Golden Globes.
And straight from that, he went back to Chris Columbus and started work on 9 Months, where he played Julian Moore's bungling Russian obstetrician, continually mixing up his words with things like, let's have a look at your Volvo.
In 1974, he received an Emmy nomination for a brief role in Homicide: Life on the Streets. Then Robin went back to the kids' market with the interesting fantasy Jumanji. Here, a young Kirsten Dunst and Bradley Pierce play a magical board game and accidentally released Robin, who'd been trapped in the game as a child 26 years before.
I wonder if he drew on Peter Pan for some of that, because you look at the character sometimes and I go, I can see a bit of Peter Pan in there somewhere.
Yeah, I can see that too.
Just me? Maybe not.
Now, Jumanji was a tremendous kids' film, both scary and uplifting at the same time. Once again, he broke the $100 million mark for his film.
Now, here's a little-known fact for you. Robin Williams was actually up for the role of the Riddler in the next Batman movie. Yeah, the role went to Jim Carrey, but I'm not sure who would have made the better Riddler there.
And just while we're on it, the Truman Show was also going to Robin until Jim Carrey got it. How different would the Truman Show be if Robin Williams had been leading?
I think it would have been better, actually. I can see Robin playing the serious side of the Truman Show so much better than Jim Carrey did.
Mm.
I mean, okay, Jim Carrey's a good actor, but he's a comedian. And yeah. I really have trouble seeing him in anything other than a comedy role. Whereas Robin, you can see him doing the drama and the comedy. He fits the whole thing. But Jim Carrey, who we might cover later on, is more of your comedy actor.
I think it's also Robin has seriously looked at dramatic roles and taken on dramatic films. Carrey really hasn't.
No. Anyway. And anything he does take on, which could be serious, he turns into a comedy.
Yeah.
Yes Man, for example.
Yeah. So Robin was then offered a role in the film To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Oh, that was interesting.
Three drag queens crossing the U.S. on the way to California, meeting serious disapproval and finding much love. Now, Robin was offered the lead role, but having just done Mrs. Doubtfire, he thought, nah, better not, and he left it to Patrick Swayze. So instead, he did a cameo as, and I love the name of this character that he played, John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Now, if you haven't seen Thanks for Everything, To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, just go and see Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Exactly. And
yeah, the American
slightly better, actually.
The Australian movie.
Yeah. Okay, he was also asked to play another camp role the next year, but he decided to switch roles. He was offered a role and he said, no, I don't like that role, let's switch it. He gave the role to Nathan Lane. Of course, we're talking about The Birdcage.
Yes. Good move, I think.
I think so. It was a wonderful film. Robin plays a gay club owner whose son wants to bring his girlfriend and her severely conservative parents over to stay.
Now, that was Calista Flockhart, Gene Hackman, and Diane Wiest.
Yep. Once again, he's surrounding himself with great actors. Yeah,
what a cast.
So it was Robin with his flamboyant female impersonating boyfriend, Nathan Lane. They must pretend to be straight. Now, because the female clothes didn't particularly suit Robin's hairy frame, Robin became known as Dragzilla.
Sorry.
Yet another $100 million hit. Now, Mike Nichols, the director, had a very interesting approach to this film because he knew both Nathan Lane and Robin Williams were notorious for ad-libs on set. So he insisted that they get one good take of each scene sticking strictly to the script. Then he'd allow them to do it again and improvise. What an interesting way. I'd love to see what came out of the film as per script and what came out improvised.
Which take did they use?
Must get special features on that.
Yeah. Now, Robin's always known for having a childlike sense of wonder when he does his comedy routines. And everything he does, you sort of look at him and say, I can see the inner child coming out. He uses his child's outlook to his best advantage. And he played a man-child in Hook, Toys and Jumanji, and his characters in Mork and Mindy and The Fisher King not being far off being children. And then in 1996, he went hog wild and played Jack.
Interesting film. Saw him as Jack Powell, a kid with an aging disorder that gave him the body of a 40-year-old while he was at the age of 10. Now, Robin initially turned down the role, believing he'd covered this territory extensively already, but was tempted on board when the director, Francis Ford Coppola, decided to direct. Audiences stayed away. It was, after all, a miserable premise for a movie.
Since 1986, Robin had been co-hosting the comic relief shows with Billy Crystal, engaging in some healthy comic competition. The pair of them, according to Williams, behaving like two elk spraying musk.
Yeah, there's an image I don't really need.
No, we'll just leave that one well and truly alone.
Now, Robin and Billy Crystal had been looking for a chance to act together, and it finally came in the form of Father's Day. Here Robin played a depressed writer and Crystal a smart lawyer, both of them being told by a mutual ex-girlfriend that he's the father of the 17-year-old son who's run off and needs to be found.
Now, it was a fast and fun movie, no world beater, but Williams and Crystal both got on to Friends to make guest appearances to promote the film, which is kind of weird and unheard of, but they did it. Mm. And if you haven't seen it, again, grab it, have a look. It's a good film.
Now, by this time, Robin had sorted out his disagreements with Disney and went back to make the film Flubber. Oh. This was a remake of the old Absent-Minded Professor, and it was good. He was playing Professor Phil Brainard, who has trouble coping with the real world, and then the real world has trouble coping with his new invention, a very uncontrollable bouncing substance called Flubber.
I don't know. I just didn't really get it myself. I had trouble with the Flubber having a mind of its own and dancing around the room and all that sort of stuff. It just, I know it was a Disney film and Disney loves to give intelligence to inanimate objects, but just didn't do it for me.
Big hit, Pete, but not as big as his next one. He decided to lend his weight and experience to a small film by a couple of newcomers. The film was Good Will Hunting. The newcomers.
And the newcomers?
Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Yeah, they haven't done much since then, have they?
No, not at all.
Not at all, yeah.
Robin was playing the psychiatrist to Matt Damon's troubled street kid genius, and he was basically excellent. He added his own lines to the script. In the scene where he tells Damon about his dead wife and her farting, Matt Damon was laughing so hard because he'd never actually heard the speech before. Now you can see this on screen. And if you look really closely, you see that the cameraman is actually shaking with laughter too. And at last, Robin got himself an Oscar for his efforts in this film. After all
not
the nominations,
as a comedian, though.
No, it was a straight role once again. Yeah. Now, as a was it the Oscar for the best supporting role? Now, after he'd won, he actually sent a small replica of the statue over to the guy in Germany who dubbed his voice, and he sent it with a note saying, "Thank you for making me famous in Germany."
Isn't that nice? He thinks of all the other people as well.
Yeah.
So after Good Will Hunting came What Dreams May Come, an interesting little film, and then one of his most famous films of all, Patch Adams.
It was an interesting film, a true-ish kind of story about a doctor who defied the authorities and treated patients more successfully by prescribing laughter along with traditional remedies. For many, it was the role Robin had waited his whole career to play. The guy who actually saves lives with jokes. The critics didn't like it too much and tore it to pieces. But Robin was so popular that the public ignored them and went on to make it another $100 million hit.
Which just proves my point. What do critics know?
Exactly.
Hmm.
Now, actually, I read the book, and I think the film resembled two paragraphs in the book.
Yeah. As you would imagine. Yeah.
Yes.
It's during the filming of Patch Adams, Robin showed how big a heart he has, and him and the rest of the crew worked really closely with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and they worked to fulfill the fantasies of several children who were undergoing cancer treatment at the time, and the kids actually appeared in the film with Robin in the scenes in the pediatric ward. So the kids were actual patients, but they weren't actually being treated by Robin, but actual patients. Make-A-Wish Foundation brings them in. They get to be in a movie with Robin Williams. I mean, laughter is the best medicine after all.
It is. It is. Now, it seems that Robin could do no wrong. And then, of course, it all went wrong.
Uh-oh.
Robin's next movie was Jacob the Liar, where he played a lonely widower in a Polish ghetto in 1944. The movie might have been a success, but although it was made at the same time, it was fatally released after the Oscar-winning Life is Beautiful. And by this time, people had enough of Holocaust humour for now.
Mm. Now, after Jacob the Liar came one of Robin's most interesting roles in Bicentennial Man, where he actually played a robot. So he didn't have his face, and he couldn't do the massive body movements or anything like that to get his humour across. He had to just be Robin Williams. Now, it was based on the Isaac Asimov story, and he was basically a cyborg, a servant, or a butler, who grows and wants to become human and lives for 200 years. And he went from being a robot to being an actual person. And it's a really great film, brings me to tears every time I watch it, but it was a financial disaster. And it cost Robin much of his clout in Hollywood, which is an interesting thing. I mean, it was out of character for him, and it was a lot of makeup and a lot of, prosthetics and things like that. And for some reason, the public in the States just didn't really go for it. It was successful over here in Australia, but I don't know what it was, but I loved it. I thought it was great. I'm sounding like a judge on American Idol now.
After that, Robin turned bad. Real bad.
Oh, yeah.
1 hour photo.
Oh.
Now, he won rave reviews as a photo lab worker who becomes devoted to a young local family, and then it gets weirder and weirder. He turns this unusually sweet guy into something infinitely more malevolent.
Oh, I love the scene when he's sitting in the lounge room and he's putting on the jumper and, yeah.
Mm. Next time, another very dark little movie, Death to Smoochie. Now, this had all sorts of troubles trying to get released. It was a very dark film, directed by Danny DeVito. It saw Robin as a Rainbow Smiley, a kid show host who's sacked for taking bribes and then replaced by Smoochie. It was Ed Norton in a cuddly purple rhino suit. Drunk and drugged up, Rainbow aches for revenge, desperately trying to trick Smoochie into appearing at a neo-Nazi rally. Unfortunately, Robin really does make a superb psycho.
He does, doesn't he? I haven't seen Death of Smoochie. I may have to look that one up. It sounds
it's
freaky.
It's dark.
Doing a lot of movies, Robin had been away from the stand-up scene for nearly 16 years at this stage. He hit the road and toured America with the critically acclaimed one-man show that became the highest-grossing comedy tour ever and culminated in performances that were filmed by HBO and broadcast live from New York on July the 14th, 2002. The special entitled Robin Williams Live on Broadway was nominated for 5 Emmy Awards. 16 years away from the craft, and he comes back to that sort of acclaim.
Ooh.
Amazing.
So he went back to another very strange little film, Insomnia.
Yes.
Now, Al Pacino starred in this with Robin. He played Will Dahmer, a cop who, while chasing the killer, becomes more and more compromised. Robin, meanwhile, is the killer, a writer of crime fiction who thinks he can lead the investigators around by the nose. It was in this film that Robin, despite having won an Oscar 5 years beforehand, was finally accepted as an actor of real class. Who'd been ignoring him up to now?
Well, it wasn't me, that's for sure.
2004 would seem in the final cut. Robin would play a prominent cutter, a man who scans through the memories of the recently deceased and makes feel-good biopics to cheer the bereaved family.
Interesting little film. Yeah. Slithers of science fiction to it, but, interesting little film.
Mm. Then he went off to do stand-up performances at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas. And then the end of the year, he did a cameo appearance on the film Noelle. That stars Susan Sarandon, Penelope Cruz and Alan Arkin.
2005 bought up robots. Now, Robin lent his voice to the irrepressible tourist guide who helps McGregor save the city. Of course, mostly improv'd, much as it was in Aladdin. Turned the movie from being a dull dud into a big hit. It's amazing. One person's contribution can make a big difference.
Mm. 2005 would say a very odd year for Robin. He'd enjoy contributing a filthy story to the documentary film The Aristocrats. And that's a very weird little movie.
Mm-hmm.
He'd also received the special Cecil B. DeMille Award at the Golden Globes for his contribution to the arts. He'd also faced legal problems, being forced to stop the activities of one guy called Michael Clayton, who was a con man who pretended to be Robin and duped charities out of considerable money.
The cad. 2006 would perhaps be the biggest year yet for Robin, seeing no fewer than 6 new releases. This is 6 movies. First came The Night Listener. Now, that was a really interesting film. He played an on-air radio host, a gay on-air radio host, who befriends a 14-year-old victim of child abuse. And the child's stepmum, Toni Collette, comes to describe the boy's slow deterioration and, it's a real dark and disturbing movie. Check it out if you dare.
Next would come the much more cheerful Happy Feet.
Oh, yes, please. Cheer us up.
There's another animated film about an emperor penguin with a gift for tap dancing. Now, Robin would keep on the happy trail with RV, Runaway Vacation. He'd play an overworked father of a dysfunctional family who plans on a relaxing trip to the Rockies in the hired recreational vehicle that he'd got.
Following RV came August Rush, where a musical prodigy, Highmore, seeks his birth parents with the aid of Robin's kindly wizardry.
I'd like to see that one. I don't think I've caught that one yet.
It's an interesting movie. It wasn't really jumped on by everybody, but those people that did see it came and said, wow, that was a really good movie. It was really powerful. But you recommended the people to watch, and they took out, it's got Robin Williams in it. Maybe, you know, but yeah, check it out if you can.
Mm. Next came Man of the Year. This is where Robin played a late-night political talk show host who, as a joke, runs for president. And due to unusual circumstances, actually makes it into the White House.
Ah, yes. And he ended the year, of course, with Night at the Museum. If you haven't seen Night at the Museum, what planet have you been on?
Yes.
He plays the president, or I should say he plays the statue of the president, Teddy Roosevelt. Yeah, comes to life in the middle of the night and all hell breaks loose in the museum, and Robin is just brilliant. It's again, one of those straight comedy performances that he does, if that makes any sense at all. he's funny without trying to be overly funny.
In 2008, Robin made a special guest appearance on the TV show Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Oh, if you haven't seen that episode, you've got to find it and see it. He is so good.
It was an excellent appearance.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Then came the movie World's Greatest Dad, which was directed by another great comedian, Bobcat Goldthwait. And then Old Dogs with his good friend John Travolta.
Now, Old Dogs was also with Seth Green.
2008, who has also undergone open-heart surgery to replace a valve in his heart.
I bet he didn't laugh through that one.
Yes, he did, actually. His newest album, which we'll talk about in a second, he does comment a lot about the open-heart surgery.
Now, of course, Robin's been to Australia numerous times. Most recently, he was here to record the voice for Happy Feet number 2.
Ooh.
Now, Happy Feet, would that make Happy Foot? No.
On his return to the United States, he sparked controversy on the David Letterman show by stating that Australians are like English rednecks. Now, the Australian Prime Minister suggested that Robin should look at Alabama to find rednecks. Then the governor of Alabama responded with some digs about Australians. You know, some people just can't see the joke.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out what an English redneck is, you know.
Australians, obviously.
Yeah, I know. It's just that, yeah. Mm.
So let's see. Robin, who began his career with stand-up comedy, has recently wrapped up a critically acclaimed sellout tour of Weapons of Self-Destruction. As one of the most successful stand-up comedy tours of the year. Now, over the course of the tour, Robin performed 90 shows in 65 cities in front of 300,000 fans across the country, as well as in London and in Canada.
But he didn't come here and do it, did he?
Didn't come here, no. Now, since its launch in September 2008, the tour grossed an astounding $40 million for a live tour. These rock bands are doing it wrong. You don't need big lighting and special effects. You just need, you know, a guy with great talent and a single microphone.
That's it.
Weapons was taped over two nights in Washington and premiered on December 6th on HBO, and it turned out to be the network's highest-rated stand-up comedy special of the year. And it's a very, very funny album.
When you see Robin doing a stand-up gig, he is basically that. It's him on a stage with a microphone. And Lord help anybody in the first couple of
well, actually, Robin does something really good with his live shows. He does not sell the front row. And 5 minutes before curtain, people go up to the people up in the gods, up in the very back row, and invite them down to the front row.
Wow.
The theory being that these people really want to be there. Obviously, haven't got a lot of money, but they really want to be there, and they're willing to sit up in the gods. Robin brings them down front, and he knows those people are going to be so happy, he's going to feed off their energy for the rest of the night.
Mm. Good move.
Absolutely. I love it. So that brings us pretty much to now. As well as Happy Feet 2, Robin has in pre-production a film called The Prince of Providence.
Do we know much about that one yet?
Not a thing. Well, that was a marathon effort from Robin Williams.
Oh, boy. It was long, 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 but well and truly worth it.
And to think he's still going, I can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah, he's been on the go, what, for 1951 to now, so he's getting up there, but he still has the energy, the drive, and the humour to get out there and do it.
Yes. And if you can get the album, Weapons of Mass Self-Destruction, don't listen to it on your MP3 player while you walk down the street, because people look at you really strange when you burst out laughing for no apparent reason.
Oh, dear. Well, we'd better get going. This is another episode of Historical Hystericals. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have.
We've loved it.
Who are we going to tackle next? Well, we don't know, and we'll find out. If you've got any suggestions about who you'd like to hear, please send them through to us via the website. You can go to Facebook, look us up there, or you can go to the Podomatic website, which is, Mike?
The website for Podomatic, commandermike356.podomatic.com. You can leave us mail there, or you can email us at commandermike356@yahoo.com.au, or as we say, Historical Hystericals Facebook page.
We have had requests for people like Tony Hancock.
Yep. We gotta go. Time's up.
That's it. Ciao, everybody.
Have fun.
Bye.